team with high hopes and high expectations deserve high-quality coverage.
Matthews with a shot, score! Marner, score! Wee Willie Nylander!
Good thing you've come to the right place. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
It's another day without Leafs hockey, which is unfortunate. The Buds are practicing out in Cali today before their swing against the Kings, Sharks, and Ducks. But also, Al's brother, Miley Cyrus's birthday.
Yes, Miley Cyrus turning a ripe 29 years old today. Miley Cyrus was my number one all-time childhood crush.
Aww.
So, Miley Cyrus, happy birthday to you.
I'm sure she's listening.
Well, have you ever been to a concert, Cyrus concert?
Yeah. Actually, one of the only times I visited Toronto before I moved here was for the Best of Both Worlds concert tour when I was like 10. And my poor dad had to come. And it was at the ACC. And I remember one of the ushers saying, "Hey, sir," my dad was wearing like a Toronto Maple Leafs zip up or something to that effect. And I remember the bouncer saying, or the usher saying something to the effect of, "Hey, sir, you know this is a Hannah Montana concert, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know. Don't remind me."
That's funny. That is pretty funny. I actually, so my sister was somewhat of a celebrity stalker when she was a kid, I swear. But we were like visiting some family friends in Connecticut, and the husband said, "Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure Miley Cyrus is doing a free concert in New York City at like Rockefeller Center or for the Good Morning America or something like that." My sister caught wind of that. That morning, we hopped in the car, went to New York. We had to sleep on the streets of New York.
What?
Yes, to be able to get
you
into
did that.
The
you slept
tickets.
On the streets.
I slept on the streets.
And you're swearing your sister like you didn't also want to be there?
No, I definitely also wanted to be there. But I would not have done that if she didn't initiate. I would not have initiated. Now, since we were already there, I was like, okay, well, I'm not just going to not see a Miley Cyrus concert. So I did. So that was the first. That's the only time maybe I saw Miley. Actually, no, I think I saw her. I went to a VMA show in California, actually, a couple of years ago where she was performing. So I did see her there as well. But yeah, I'll never forget that. Slept on the streets of New York one night.
That's insane.
It was crazy. I think my dad went and bought like a blanket, so at least we had something to sit on, so it wasn't the dirty, filthy New York City sidewalk. But yeah, it was an interesting night. Interesting night. Made some friends too while we were there.
I feel like I know so much more about you now that I know that you did that. Like, that's hardcore.
Yeah.
Hey, wait. Also, major milestone in our relationship. Mm-hmm. You tried a Persian.
Yes. Thank you very much, Paul. Mr. Paul Tesheri, just an absolute beautician, brought some Persians into Toronto, and I got to try one today, and I got to tell you, lived up to expectations. It was pretty
nice.
Delicious.
I don't know where Craig Button is. We got to get a Persian to him, though.
Yes, yes. I think he's going to be in town this week. So
really?
Yeah, we'll have to see where he's at.
We got to get a Persian to that man.
Mm-hmm.
So before we came on the air, Al's brother, we were having a little bit of a debate, and it mostly started because of the absolute tear that Nazem Kadri is on, specifically last night against the Ottawa Senators. He had a four-point night, a goal and three assists, and it got us thinking. It got us, like, I know yesterday we were saying we have to get over things, Islanders fans have to get over things, but obviously it got us a little bit hypothetical in our feels. And we put it out there on Twitter at Leafs Lunch 1050. Hindsight is 2020, but if Dubas could go back and have one little doobie doobie Dubas do over, what would it be? And we got some pretty interesting responses. Most popularly, Nazem Kadri is the answer.
Yeah, I mean, Nazem Kadri, you look back on it, you know, you got Tyson Barrie back in the deal, which at the time, I'll fully admit, I was all in on that trade. I was fully in favor on it. The Maple Leafs for years have been searching for a right-handed puck-moving top pair defenseman, and that's kind of what Barrie was billed as coming to Toronto. It did not turn out to be that. He was here, it was a one-and-done season, then he walked as a free agent, and all of a sudden, now the Maple Leafs were missing a core piece in Nazem Kadri, and he's gone on to have great success in Colorado. I think I saw he's got like 23 points so far this season. He's got 13 his last five since McKinnon got injured, which is just incredible. So, you know, I think that is a popular answer and one that a lot of people probably wish in hindsight would be a do-over. But a couple other really good ones. I mean, not signing Zach Hyman is another one that some people are putting out there.
Okay, literally only one person in you.
Well, I'm just saying, it is a popular one. No, yeah. There's a couple of people, I think, that said Zach Hyman. But to me, not signing him prior to last season, letting him play out the year is kind of the mistake. That's the do-over. You get him locked up to a much better deal than you would have had to pay him after his career year. That, to me, is what they where they made the big mistake, was not getting that deal done early on. But there's a couple of other good ones out there.
Yeah, I'm seeing Foligno get bounced around a little bit. I don't really fault Dubas at all for Foligno, because that really should have worked out, I think. There's no way that Dubas could have predicted the injury issue over and over again. So I don't really fault Dubas for that one, honestly.
How are you feeling about the Tavares signing? Because we're seeing that one pop up a lot here, too.
Right. So the thing with Tavares is that he took less money in Toronto, did he not? He could have gotten more money elsewhere.
Yeah, pajama boy, though. Wanted to come home.
They weren't pajamas. He always has to specify. They were his bed sheets.
All right.
Give the man justice. They were his bed sheets, not his jammies. $11 million is a lot of money.
Well, it's a lot of money for a lot more years. And something else that's been pointed out, too, is it kind of set the tone for how much the rest of the big four were going to be able to make. Like, when they signed JT to that deal at $11 million, it was before the rest of those three had signed. So, you know, automatically, Austin Matthews is like, well, I'm going to make more than him. I'm better than him. So automatically, Matthews' contract comes in at an astronomically high rate coming out of his ELC. And then for, you know, Mitch Marner's like, well, I'm just as good as John Tavares. I got to be making close to him. So he ends up holding out and getting a pretty hefty deal. So it somewhat set the market for the young guys. Whereas if you look at Colorado, for example, Nate McKinnon was only making like $5.6 million. So
doesn't that hurt?
It does. But that's why guys like Rantanen was like, well, you can't be making the $11 million that these other guys are making, so they had to take a little bit of a discount. Not a discount, but more of a fairer deal, I suppose. And then even Cale Makar, you know, he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. He had a great night last night, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he only signed for $9 million this summer, and only. That's a heck of a lot of money.
Isn't but that then, what our contracts are?
But then we started, I wish. But then we started seeing all these other defensemen getting absolutely paid this offseason. And legitimately, 2 weeks after that deal got signed, that turned into an absolute bargain. But, you know, I think that the Tavares one, you look back on it, there's a lot of pros that came with the deal, but there are some cons. I'm not too sure I would call for a do-over on it. However, you could say if they don't move on from Tavares, maybe the Kadri trade doesn't happen because they still would need that number two. And, you know, Kadri, who's coming into his own as a top six player out in Colorado, he really started that in his final, you know, year in Toronto, final couple seasons in Toronto. And then that production dried up when he got kind of diminished into a lower role when JT came back. But, you know, it's really an interesting conversation that I know Leafs Nation will kind of never let die.
Right. We'll have Travis Yost on and James Myrtle on a little bit later in the show, and we'll get more into this. Wait, this is one that just came in. AB, I want to get your thoughts on it. Exposing McCann instead of Hall.
Oh, yeah.
That is an interesting one. Shout out to you, Scott Schell. That's a good one.
That's an interesting one. I don't think I agreed with it at the time. So I guess, you know, in hindsight, sure, maybe, I suppose, because Hall ended up becoming a healthy scratch, but he's rebounded a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he's rebounded decently with Muzzin, so maybe it's maybe a little bit too early, I guess, to make that as a do-over. We'll see how it all plays out.
We shall. You're listening to Leafs Lunch. I'm Julia. He's Al's brother. The Leafs back in action tomorrow night out in Cali. Let's bring in Travis Yost, TSN hockey analytics writer. Travis, you wrote about Austin Matthews last week, and just the title of the story will have Leafs fans excited. Underlying numbers point to a Matthews scoring surge. You guys can find that article on tsn.ca. Travis, can you give a little bit more context there as to why you think Matthews is due here?
Yeah, I think he's a really interesting player this year, right? Because Matthews, among other things, is coming off, you know, a wrist injury that we know can create some consternation and some struggles during the recovery process as to how a player shoots a puck. But I've been watching Matthews this season like most people, and it's interesting because the scoring really hasn't materialized, especially at even strength. Yet he and his line generate just heaps of scoring chances every single night at even strength and from the really, really dangerous areas of the ice, right? If you look at where players like Matthews or Bunting or Nylander or Marner when they've played on the Matthews line. If you look where they're generating shots, it's generally from the circles and inside of the circles in that low slot area where shooting percentages are always through the roof. So if you look at Matthews' profile this year, I mean, he's generating a ton of shots per game. His line is generating more shots per game than they ever have in Matthews' entire career. They're not playing any more time. They're not spending any more time defending the run of play. They're conceding fewer shots defensively when they're on the ice. So, you know, long story short, right, they basically play the entire shift in the offensive zone. They generate a ton of offensive pressure and scoring chances from dangerous areas. And yet Matthews has all of 3 goals at even strength, and I think in all situations he's shooting just 9%. All of the arrows are pointing in the right direction for an Austin Matthews breakout, and I do think this process is really important, right? Because not only are NHL teams doing this for players who they expect to rebound aggressively and how they think about deploying those players, we've seen the opposite side of that, where, you know, the underlying numbers, shots start falling off, scoring chances are more diminished, players are defending the run of play more. You know, that sort of situation, when the arrows are pointing down, coaches have to get aggressive with their lineup, making changes, maybe splitting lines up, maybe splitting pairs up. In the case of Toronto, in the case of Sheldon Keefe and the Austin Matthews line, it just seems like an offensive breakout is inevitable at even strength. I mean, they everything looks good on the ice. The goals haven't come yet, but for Matthews in particular, I'm expecting them to start racking up here in the next few weeks.
Travis, do you think that maybe like rotating lines and line mates in with Austin Matthews and kind of a lack of chemistry maybe could be as a result of some early season struggles when it comes to producing here?
Yeah, I mean, that you always, it's hard to dismiss that, you know, offhand, right? Michael Bunting, for example, has played 138, almost 140 minutes with Austin Matthews this year, and that's a completely new face, by and large, to Austin Matthews, right? So you do have a little bit of a wrinkle there, but, you know, I make the same example. He's played the most minutes this season with who? With Mitch Marner. I mean, 88, 90% of his even strength minutes have been played with Mitch Marner. Wherever you stand on Marner, he's one of the better playmakers and the better passers in the league. And him and Matthews have been a scoring dynamo, really whenever they're together, right, wrong, or otherwise, whether they're struggling defensively off the puck, doesn't matter. They've never had trouble, creating scoring chances and creating goals, at 5-on-5 or at even strength. And they are this year. I think if you marry up the video of these games and marry up the stats and you look at what this line is doing, they are just not getting any bounces right now. And when you can boil it down to they're not getting a lot of bounces, that's usually when the avalanche starts to come. For Matthews in particular, I think it's important, you know, for a player who I'm sure has very high expectations of himself, you don't want to start losing confidence in what you're doing here. Because again, the results in and of itself look quite good. The goals have not materialized yet, but usually, historically speaking, when great players are generating this type of volume, it's only a matter of time before the dam breaks. And we've seen this with Matthews 4 or 5 different times over the course of his career, and they've always ended up in a pretty electric scoring surge, and I'm expecting this one to follow suit.
Yeah, and I think one of the more weird things about all of this and the fact that we're not seeing kind of an uptick in scoring for Austin Matthews early on in the season, you could, you know, say he's gotten a little bit of bad puck luck, but what I find bizarre is the fact that his offensive zone deployment has a 6% uptick compared to his career average, which should lead to more offense. It just hasn't quite happened.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, right? I mean, I would turn that glass upside down on you and say, hey, look, like, not only are they feeding him even more opportunity, unless we think Austin Matthews is now incapacitated as a shooter or there's something in what we're seeing, you know, on video that makes him less threatening, that's just another data point that suggests, like, he's, again, being put in situations and he's being deployed in certain ways that really do create scoring opportunities for players. And because the goals haven't fallen yet, it makes it even more bizarre that the scoring just hasn't really ticked up yet. But that is exactly what you want to see, right? You don't want to see a coach throttling that back and saying, well, look, Matthews is off to a bit of a slow start. Let's start feeding our middle six lines more of those offensive zone starts. That's not good for the team. It's not good for Matthews. And I don't, in this case, I wouldn't think that sort of tweak is justified either, right? I mean, that line is doing everything that you could ask for and then some, minus finding the back of the net. Eventually, the Maple Leafs coaching staff needs that dam to break. But, you know, I think right now, the way the organization sees it is, the line's in a bit of a scoring rut, but they're not in a hockey rut. They're playing hockey at a high level. The goals just haven't fallen yet, but they, you know, again, in this sport, you know, it's just as much about goal differential as it is about how well you can score. And you know, you look at the Austin Matthews line, and you know what? Even though they're not scoring as much, they're also not conceding as much defensively. You're still out there on average beating your opponent. All that's going to end up doing is driving more goals and wins into the standings anyway. The scoring will come as a result.
We've got TSN hockey analytics writer Travis Yost on the phone right now on Leafs Lunch. We got into this a bit yesterday with Mike Johnson. Travis, I know that the underlying analytics are saying that the Leafs should be scoring goals, and you've made that abundantly clear. We both know that from looking at the numbers. Do you think there's any specific reason why that the scoring at even strength has been down this year, aside from they just haven't been going in yet?
I honestly, I know this sounds lame, but I really do subscribe to they just haven't fallen yet. And,
yeah.
And the reason why, I mean, look at some of the other arrows around the team, right? No one is sitting here saying this same Maple Leafs offense on the power play is struggling, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think at the time of the writing, they were first, or I think they were second actually in the league in rate scoring on the power play. I mean, it's the same collection of players, and I understand special teams is a fundamentally different environment, but you're talking about the same offensive creators, the same shooters of the puck. The only variable that's changed is one less defender on the ice, and they are filling it up on the power play. Again, that's usually a good indicator and ends up being a tailwind for what you might deem a, you know, differentiating between what's a problem and what's not at 5-on-5. Again, if you saw shot volume suffering, if you saw the team playing more defensively, if you saw, you know, if you took a heat map of the Austin Matthews line and where these shots were coming from, and it was a lot of Morgan Riley and TJ Brody from the blue line, that, and by the way, another thing, that's the most common defensive pairing he's playing with by far.
Yeah.
The best defensive pairing they have. So again, if you look at a shot profile and you saw, you know, players like Riley and Brody were, you know, basically clogging up the offensive zone by generating a lot of 3% shots, from the blue line, then you can say, well, that would explain partially why the shooting rates are so far down. But that's the complete opposite. Riley and Brody have been very differential at 5-on-5 to the forwards and funneling that puck further down low. So I in my heart to hearts, what's today, November 23rd? I think December 23rd, 1 month from today, we are having a completely different discussion, because I there's no other justification. There's no real good explanation that would make you bearish on why the Maple Leafs are struggling to score. And when that happens, usually that's indicative for rebound territory.
Chris, we're going to have you to clip that one, and we'll have to revisit this a month from now, which I agree with you, Travis. I really do agree with you. I think it's only a matter of time. I think the Leafs are kind of scratching the surface, because the fact that this team is able to grind out wins the way they're playing defensively, grind out 2-1, 3-0 wins, the second that these goals start dropping, I mean, should we be expecting maybe some 4-5, 6-1, 6-2, 6-0 victories if this team really starts clicking on all cylinders here?
I don't see why not, but I would say this, regression works bilaterally, right? And like, for as confident as we are, because we've seen this Maple Leafs offense for 4 years just dominate, by and large. I mean, that, by the way, our priors are really, really bullish on what this Toronto offense can do, which is another thing. The other side of that also works, right? The Maple Leafs are not notoriously great defending. They are getting some great goaltending. Jack Campbell's been a godsend to that team. And that has been, they have been blistering hot on that side of the ice. On the other hand, they have a lot more to prove on that side of the ice, for us to actually get really confident about what they're doing there. But I think, to your point, I think the hallmark of a good team, putting aside offense and defense and special teams, I think the hallmark of a good team is they can win in a number of different ways, right? They can boat race you in a 6-3 game. They can slow it down and shut you off in a 2-0 game. They can outgoalie you. I mean, generally the teams that win the cup are by and large outscoring their opponents in the offensive zone in this era. But we've seen teams like Tampa Bay just completely shut it down defensively when they need to in the playoffs. And I think that's been really the key question that's followed Toronto for years, and including through this season, is can you get it done at both ends of the ice, and can you win this game in many different ways and not just the one way, which you've been accustomed to, which is just basically we're gonna let our offensive core go to work on you, and we're hoping to beat you 5-3. That's all fine and well, and the Maple Leafs have done a very good job of that in the regular season, but I think we've seen instances in which when that's not there, the scoring isn't there, when they're going through a stretch like they are right now offensively, this is really the first time the defense and goaltending have stepped up in years for this team. Yeah. So I think we need to see a lot more of that, whereas, you know, we're obviously still bullish on the offense, but, you know, I think you make a good point. If the offense turns it around and the goaltending defensive combination mix still makes sense, this team looks really, really, really dangerous in the East.
I guess that's what we've been asking for a while, and now we're getting it, and we're saying, where are the goals, right?
I know.
Travis, yesterday you wrote about the cross-checking crackdown around the league. We're about a quarter of the way through the season, and I think it was more blatant at the beginning of the year, but what do you think the verdict is here? Has the crackdown worked?
Well, it's interesting. I wrote about when the league signaled that they were going to crack down on cross-checking this offseason. I wrote about it, and I said, look, we've heard this many times. They did it with slashing for a year. And usually you get one of two things. They call it early, and then it just dissipates. Or they actually do tighten the standard, but it comes at the cost of another penalty. So we're going to call more interference, but we're going to call less holding because our only goal is to balance the penalties and blah, blah, blah. It's been interesting following the officiating standard discussion over the last month, because I think there's been a lot of dialogue about, hey, this doesn't make sense, right? A player like Connor McDavid, and he's been at the epicenter of this, should be drawing way more penalties than he is in a given game. He's getting hooked, he's getting held left and right, and the league has just kind of allowed this to fester, and because the goal is to balance penalties and the goal is to keep a free-flowing game, these high-end offensive players that should be drawing more penalties off their skill don't. And I think it's an interesting like juxtaposition between the two, because you have the NHL who said, we need to fix a cross-checking problem. We want to increase offense and reduce injuries. That was their words. They have went out and did it. We are 65 cross-checks above pace as of yesterday. It's a pretty significant number for what all amounts to 5 or 6 weeks of hockey at this point. And the rate, the rate has doubled, over the last five seasons. So the league, and they've really went after players cross-checking in the interior. If you actually go back and bounce these penalty calls off the video, defensemen are not being given the same latitude in the interior. And my point being, the league identified a problem. They have, I don't want to say resolved the issue, but they are working to clean it up. And it brings me back to the McDavid discussion and the rest of the penalty discussion and everything else. If the league can do it for cross-checking and the officials can do it for cross-checking, the door is open for them and the NHL and the players' union to figure out what does this rule book need to look like, what do we want called, what is the balance, the right balance between a free-flowing game and a penalty fest, and really, I guess, the purity of what we expect hockey to be. I don't think anyone in the hockey universe thinks that the league has struck that balance quite yet. But I do think, however small it may be, identifying a problem, correcting a problem on the ice, they are doing it with cross checks. Now the question is, can they repurpose it in other areas of the game on the officiating side where the sport actually needs it?
In conversation with Travis Yost, TSN hockey analytics writer. And Travis, you brought up another really good question in the article about whether the NHL needs to just call more penalties to try and improve the on-ice product. Where do you stand on that?
So the short answer is I think they do. And the longer answer is I think there's got to be a line in the sand for the NHL at a penalty level in terms of what is truly disruptive to the run of play, what is truly injurious or at risk of injuring players versus what are nuisance penalties that really just congest the game. And the reason why I say that is this would not be the first time where if the league said, hey, look, we're going to call more penalties because the game needs to be cleaned up, for lack of better words. The league tried this coming out of the 04-05 lockout, and it was a complete penalty fest. The league complained that too much time, or, you know, some of the owners and board of governors, too many penalties being called, too many power play opportunities, too much start stop. And I am very sympathetic to the entertainment arguments of this. On the other hand, like, if I'm watching two guys, you know, crawl up Connor McDavid's back to slow him down as he rips through the ice, yeah, that's pretty disruptive to the sport. Like, that's real entertainment value, watching Connor McDavid. It's not entertaining watching a guy pull him to the ice illegally, and we just kind of accept it because that's the way the NHL has been the last 15 years. So I think there are certain penalties that absolutely need to be addressed. I think cross-checking was absolutely one of them just because of the safety effect. The goaltender interference, they have not figured out. I think that's patently clear. But I think there's ways to attack this in a way that they can increase the amount of power play opportunities that are really deserved at this point. And I think that would also have a countering effect for players to understand, like, hey, look, steady state for the next 5 years, this is going to be called, this is not going to be called. And it removes a lot more of the ambiguity out of where that line is, because that line is very gray. And by the way, like, if you don't think that's the case, just look at how the regular season plays out as penalties stop being called as the course of the season plays out, and the playoffs, literally nothing is called. Asking a player to understand where that boundary is ridiculous. That's on the league and the union to work together to determine.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. There needs to be some sort of standard that gets set, and not just for certain points of the season, just a regular standard all season long, all playoff long. It'll be a lot easier for everybody.
The biggest thing on this by a mile that I guess really changed or shaped my opinion on it, you just read a few pages of the NHL rulebook. It's like it's like you're reading a different sport in a different league, and it's like, well, why does this document even exist then? Because this is not the way the sport is called. It's not the way it's officiated, right, wrong, or otherwise. So, like, just read the NHL rulebook. It is not in any way, shape, or form reflective of what the NHL calls. And, like, that to me seems like a fundamental problem the league's got to fix.
Agreed. Yeah. And, you know, people like yourself writing about these things, bringing it to the light of the public, that's kind of how change happens. So hopefully we do get some clarity on some of these issues. Travis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Anytime, guys. Have a good week.
Take care. There he goes. Travis Yost, TSN hockey analytics writer. Man, super passionate. Super passionate guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, I love Travis. He's a great writer, too. He's one of those guys who can blend numbers and words together so perfectly.
Totally. I'm not a huge numbers girl, and he just does a great job.
He does a great job. Like go read the article. He put it out yesterday on TSN.ca about the cross-checking. I recall reading it early on in the season where he said, okay, they're going to implement and try and put a crackdown on the cross-check, and now he's just a quarter way through the season. Okay, let's do an update. Let's see if they're actually doing that. Like you said, they're 65 more than they had a season ago at this point, so it seems like they are doing that. And hey, if you're going to go out there and call more penalties for the Maple Leafs, a team that's got a pretty good power play, that means more goals. And goals are good in the sport of hockey.
Goals are good.
Goals are good. Coming up next, we will be joined by James Myrtle of The Athletic. I don't think he's joined us yet.
Not yet. I've never spoken to him, actually.
No, so we'll get a chance to chat with Myrtle, get his thoughts on how the Maple Leafs are doing and his thoughts on the upcoming road trip through California. We'll do all that next when we return. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. My bad habits
lead to late. It's so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace, LeaseBusters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to LeaseBusters.com. Julia Teixeira, Al's brother Mike DiStefano with you on Leafs Lunch. As always, we'll have James Myrtle of The Athletic on in the next 10 or so minutes. AB, you looking through for any more listener responses as to some Dubas do-overs?
Yeah, we've got a couple more people. Obviously, there's a lot that aren't too pleased about the Marner contract.
Yeah, I knew
a lot of hate on the Marner contract, which, I mean, right now, he's playing pretty great. If you think, like, he's earning that contract, but it's just, again, it's, you know, can you have four guys on your team making that kind of money? And now even five, if you want to toss in Morgan Rielly into that conversation. You got, what, five guys making...
The Fab Five.
The Fab Five. Making 55% of their cap. I mean, that's daunting. It's crazy. And, so it's clearly a conversation that will be had. And what's the stat? No team with a $10-plus million player has won a Stanley Cup yet?
Yeah.
So, again, it's only a statistic until that eventually gets broken, and I think eventually that will get broken. Will it be the Toronto Maple Leafs who break that? Maybe. I don't know. Could be, you know, a bunch of other teams. But, you know, until that happens, I think certainly people will always have something to say about the Mitch Marner contract.
Yeah, and there's even some like people in our mentions right now saying Marner contract, amazing player, just a lot of money.
Yeah.
So not even really a slight on Mitch Marner. It's a lot of money.
Sparks over McElhaney. How long did we talk about Sparks over McElhaney?
It seems like a distant fever dream.
But we still talk about it to this day. Yeah. And it's a big reason why, you know, I think people are skeptical on Joseph Woll over Mrazek right now. Mm-hmm. We see some skeptics on. It's only been two games. You know, yesterday, you know, MJ was trying to give me the gears. It's like, it's only been two games. And I get it. But
I like your long-term vision, AB.
I always am thinking long-term.
Always think about the long game.
And that's kind of my thing with the Tavares signing. It's like, okay, it works for 2 years. But if you don't win in those 2 years, or you don't win in those couple of years, the back end of that, if you didn't win, I mean, was it worth it? I don't know. Like, I always have such a long-term view. It's kind of, it's just what I do.
It's what you do. You know what else you do? You make picks, buddy. Team Al Dog is on a bit of a heater right now. Winners of, is it two straight, AB?
We've got two straights, and we are 4 of 6 since we introduced the Team Al Dog hats.
I actually heard O-Dog on Overdrive yesterday say something about your roster construction being a little bit questionable.
Well, I mean,
but we'll
he
disregard
can say
that.
What he wants, but we're winning games.
We'll disregard that right now. So since you're rolling right now, Mike, we thought we'd give you the opportunity to hit on some NHL predictions.
I just don't see it happening.
It always weirds me out kind of when we do an AB drop on our show. Because
my own drop?
Yeah, because it's very confusing as to whether or not you're talking to me or this guy and Chris are talking to me. AB, you can only choose one. Oh, this is spicy. This is spicy. You can only choose one. Which duo will propel their team out of the first round of the playoffs? McDavid Dreisaitl or Matthews and Marner?
Yeah, this is a difficult one. Look, obviously, I think both of these teams like have not had playoff success, and obviously, we all know what's haunted the Maple Leafs—the first round exit 5 straight years. But I for some reason believe that they might be able to get it done this year.
Right.
I think they might be able to get it done. That said, I have more faith in the Edmonton Oilers getting it done. I mean, I think it's more so just based on who they're going to play in the playoffs. I think that there's a more favorable matchup for the Edmonton Oilers in the Pacific than there would be for the Maple Leafs. I mean, unless they win the division, which, I mean, they may be able to, but unless they do, odds are they're going to be playing either Florida or Tampa, potentially could play another one of these teams. But if they play one of those, that's a difficult matchup. Whereas if you take a look at over at the Pacific, I mean, Edmonton right now, if playoffs started right now, they'd be playing the Anaheim Ducks. I feel good about them in a series again with the Anaheim Ducks, comparatively to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who right now would be playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I am going to say Dreisaitl and McDavid. I feel more confident with them winning a round than I do with the Maple Leafs winning a round. But I think they could both win rounds this year. Like, if I had to pick one, I would go there.
Fun?
But I actually think that they both have chances to win.
I agree. Yeah. If there's one Leaf who will win a major award this year, who is it most likely to be?
Interesting. I think the easy answer here would be Jack Campbell.
Totally.
Right? Like this, as of now, he is a Vezina front runner.
Cash money.
Like, this guy's unreal. Literally leading in almost every single goaltending category. But a bit more of an off-the-board selection. What about Mitch Marner for the Selke?
I like it. It's off the board. He got votes last year, didn't he?
He finished top 10 in Selke voting a year ago. And the way that he's playing right now, I mean, the way that Mitch Marner has transformed himself into a bit of a 200-foot player is actually, like, crazy to me, to be quite honest with you. I think that Mitch Marner has a real opportunity at some point to win a Selke. Like, he's dominant on the penalty kill. Obviously, this is a top three PK unit in the NHL. He's a big part of it. And the way that he's really learning to play on both ends of the ice, I think, is incredible. And if you remember, it was about a year ago, I think, he even said himself, the biggest honor would be to win the Selke as a defensive player, to be honored as a defensive player for a guy who can put up 100 points a season. If you can also win a Selke on top of that, I mean, that's just unbelievable. So I'm going to go ahead and say Marner has a good shot to win the Selke.
Maybe I just don't see it happening.
Well,
see, it's weird when you contradict yourself. Like, when the drop is you, and I'm like, whoa, that was you.
That's Chris. Chris does not see it happening, apparently. I do. I do inner me. I see it happening, inner me.
Steph brought up an interesting one, our producer before the show. Sheldon Keefe for Jack Adams?
If Sheldon Keefe... Look, the Maple Leafs, to me, would have to definitely win the division. They may even have to win the President's Trophy for Keefe to get it,
right.
I think. I think that's what would have to happen for Keefe to get it. There's a lot of really solid coaches out there, and typically it's more so given to like the team that we were least expecting to win. So,
yeah.
You know, Dean Evason over in Minnesota, I think, is a hot name right now. Maybe Rod Brind'Amour, he's got the Carolina Hurricanes cooking. Best team in the league right now. So I think there's some other guys who are probably more of a front runner, but if they go on a run and they win the President's Trophy, I think Sheldon Keefe certainly has a good chance.
Yeah, I just think that I've been pumping Sheldon Keefe's tires all year long, and I think he's done a great job. Especially since, even though they're winning, he continues to try and push to be better, and I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah. All right, we got to go. We got James Myrtle coming up next from The Athletic. He'll join us. We'll chat a little bit about the California road trip coming up, and he's out there in Cali. We'll see what he's getting up to. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Jewett to share. You listen to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
I just got lost during that break in a video of Connor McDavid's house. Remember when Connor McDavid's house went viral? Was it last year, AB?
When it went, I do not recall.
Connor McDavid's house?
Yeah.
It looks like a scary vampire house.
Why?
Oh my gosh. We got to put a Twitter out. We got to put a Twitter picture out. Connor McDavid's house is like the most insane thing ever. It's all marble and black and looks like a villain origin story. But I guess Architectural Digest just did a video with him and his girlfriend, and we got a little bit of a closer look. So that's the vortex I just got lost in during that commercial break. Spoiler alert, it is still kind of scary
creepy
looking to me. Yeah.
It's an Architectural Digest doing a deep dive into Connor McDavid.
I think his girlfriend is an architect. So that checks out as to why.
That makes sense.
As to why they would do it. Let's bring in James Myrtle from The Athletic. James, we've never gotten to speak in, like, I guess this is not in person, this is on the radio, but you weighed in on my boyfriend weighing a TV drama. I think he needed to be thrown under the bus. It had to happen, or the TV wouldn't have gone up.
It was just very subtle. He was like in the brackets, but it didn't even need to be there. You know, you didn't really need to say who was responsible for the improperly hung TV. So I had to make my little comment there about being thrown under the bus. So that was funny. I saw you got it hung up, though, so that's great.
That's what happened. He had to be publicly called out in order for the job to get done, which I think is a page I took out of my mom's book.
Did he use silly putty or something to hang that TV up? It looked kind of suspect.
He really did get slandered for that, but that the putty on the wall was as a result of him trying to hang it so many times and then trying to fix the holes.
It was just the whole thing.
Don't try to do anything in your mid to early 20s around the house. Just call someone else to do it.
Call the Jiffy app. There's a promo code Hayes.
Totally.
James, you are in California on the California Western road trip. Who decides who gets to go on these marquee road trips? Because this California Western road swing is arguably the best one in the NHL. And of course, you got yourself on it. How does that process shake out?
Well, I'm fortunate in that the head office for The Athletic, for the company, is here in California. So I come on this trip every single year. I stop in at the office and I see the higher up. So Jonas Siegel, who works with me as well, is also on this trip. So he's going to be doing he'll be doing a lot of the hard work, and I'll be doing things like meetings and things like that. But the California trip is, I'm looking out my window right now. I can see the ocean. I can see the beach. I can see palm trees. And when I left Toronto last night, it was getting real cold, and I kept getting warnings that there was going to be snow. So it's definitely, if you're a Leafs fan, this should be on your bucket list to jump on this trip, because they're going to do, you know, LA, and then they hop down to San Jose, and then they're back in Anaheim. And all of those spots are great to see and great to watch a game.
Yeah, to scrape off some ice on my car this morning before I came into work. So that goes to tell you the type of weather we're dealing with up here in Toronto.
James, go ahead.
I was just going to say it was 28 degrees here yesterday, so that's what we're dealing with.
I think I hate you, James. That's where we got to that point.
James, before we get to the road trip, we're having a hypothetical Tuesday here on Leafs Lunch. We have a Twitter question out right now on at Leafs Lunch 1050 if you guys want to go check it out. The question is, hindsight is always 2020, but if Kyle Dubas had one do-over, what would it be in your opinion?
I saw that on Twitter, and I saw a lot of the responses are the Kadri trade, which is a pretty good answer. I think that you know, it's not just that they traded Kadri, it's just they didn't really get a high-impact player for him, and Tyson Barrie didn't work out, and the blue line that year wasn't very good. And, you know, they really, if they were going to trade Kadri, they really had to get a high-end defenseman in that deal, and they did. And that cost them that season to some extent with you know, to take it in another direction, I think one of the mistakes that I think probably hurt them was keeping Mike Babcock around longer than they did. I think they could have let him go in that one off season, and then it wouldn't have sort of sewered that first 23 games of the next season. I think that's something that, in hindsight, not a lot of people were saying that at the time, but in hindsight, I think that's something that they could have done differently.
Yeah, and there was a lot of discussion about that kind of after another collapse in the playoffs. It was, should we let this guy go? And they didn't. They brought him in, and then it just never really, nothing happened. They didn't progress like they hoped what they would, and then eventually ended up canning him almost 2 years ago to the date. But we were saying, like, on the flip side, where everyone's talking about some of Dubas's bad trades or signings, I mean, one of the best ones to me was bringing in Jack Campbell and Kyle Clifford for Trevor Moore and 2 third-round picks. Can you even think of anything that may even compare to that, or is that Dubas's best piece of work as the GM of the Maple Leafs?
Oh, well, I mean, Jack Campbell's a Vezina candidate right now,
right?
So, you know, like, that's his best move for sure, and I think probably number two would be the trade that he made for Jake Muzzin, who's been, you know, a really, you can argue, their best defenseman since they've acquired him. So, you know, those two trades really put the Leafs in a good spot. You know, we'll see what happens with Jack Campbell the rest of the way and if they can get him re-signed. But if he ends up being their starting goalie and playing as well as he has so far this season for another few years, that trade is going to go down as not just one of Kyle Dubas' best trades, but one of the best Leafs trades ever.
The Muzzin trade always looked good. And then the beginning of the season kind of took everyone by surprise when he came out a little bit shaky. What have you made of the Muzzin-Hall pairing since Hall returned to the lineup a couple of weeks ago?
They're still finding their way. You know, Justin Hall has really struggled, and I don't think anyone saw that coming. You know, when they protected him in the expansion draft, I thought it was understandable given what was happening with defensemen around the league, where you were seeing third pair guys get huge deals on term. It looked like it was going to be really difficult to replace him. But what we didn't know is that Justin Hall was going to struggle to start this season, and we didn't know that Timothy Logren and Rasmus Sandin were going to come out and play as well as they have. So, you know, I couldn't have predicted that the Leafs would be looking around at early November at potentially trading Justin Hall or Travis Dermott and feeling like their young guys are ready to step up and play in the top six for the rest of the season. But that's the way that it's played out. And, you know, the thing with Jake Muzzin, though, is he's been so good for so long. You go back to right when he first broke into the NHL with the Kings, and he was just, you know, he played with Drew Doughty, played big minutes, helped them win a Stanley Cup. And, you know, his first 2 years in Toronto were both, I would say, fantastic. I feel like he's going to get it together. Justin Hall has less of a track record. And I think if you're a Leafs fan, you have to be a little bit more worried about him.
In conversation with James Myrtle of The Athletic, Leafs at the quarter mark of the season this week through 20 games and currently sitting second in the Atlantic. They got the third-ranked PK, seventh-ranked power play. They've won 11 of 13. James, what's impressed you most about the Leafs' turnaround in this last stretch of games here?
I mean, I could say Jack Campbell again, but I'll go in a different direction, so I'm not repeating myself. I think the thing that stands out the most is what's happened. You just highlighted it there. What's happened with their special teams? You know, the Leafs have, as long as I've covered the team, this is my 14th year covering the Leafs, they've never had a really, really great power play combined with a really great penalty kill, and it looks like they might potentially do that this year. And it's not the sexiest thing to talk about. It's not the, you know, the most exciting thing, but, you know, changing the assistant coaches, getting Spencer Carberry and Dean Chenault in here, and they're working on the power play and the penalty kill. I mean, through 20 games, they've both been fantastic, and that's a huge equalizer for them. If you look back over the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years at why the Tampa Bay Lightning have been so much better than the Leafs in the regular season, Tampa Bay has been a dominant team on the power play and the penalty kill, and the Leafs have not. So if Toronto can figure that out, that's one of those things that can make them go from being one of those teams in that kind of like 6th to 10th best team in the NHL to potentially pushing up into the top 5, and it looks like they have the makings of doing that this year.
Yeah, it's interesting to compare last season to this season. After 20 games last season, they were 14-2-2. After 20 this year, they're 13-6-1. And you wrote about this a little bit last week for The Athletic. But where do you stand on this? Do you think the Leafs are better or worse than last season? And it's funny because we have a segment called Better or Worse.
I think right now I would say they're around the same as they were last year. I mean, people forget because of the way that last year ended. They had a great regular season. I mean, they really dominated that Canada division. And, you know, there was a lot of talk at the time that it wasn't a very good division, and that's why the Leafs were winning. And you look this year, Edmonton's having a great year. Calgary's having a great year. Winnipeg's got a good team. There are good teams in Canada, and the Leafs were the class of that group during the regular season last year. And, you know, really what happened was it's not that the Leafs were a bad team last year. It's that they were a good team, and they fell flat when it mattered the most in those three games against Montreal. So, you know, I think that they're still as talented as they were last year. Some of the tactical things that they're doing on the power play and the penalty kill seem to be working better, and Jack Campbell is going to play more games than he did last year. So you combine those things together, and there's the potential for them to be better. But it's too early in the season for me to start saying that.
Mm-hmm. In conversation with James Myrtle of The Athletic, Austin Matthews hasn't quite got off to the start production-wise that he wanted. We know that, you know, we've talked about it all day. We had Travis Yost on earlier talking about the lack of scoring at 5-on-5, just 2 goals so far this season. I'm almost curious to see if you think that perhaps a lack of consistency when it comes to the left wing position on that top role may have something to do with it, or if you think that maybe they need to have an upgrade there. Like, what do you believe there's anything to do with the fact that they don't have a solidified guy to go with that duo that could be leading to this lack of success?
It could be. I mean, just look what Zach Hyman's doing in Edmonton, right? I mean, it was going to be a downgrade no matter who they put there. And, you know, I think that this is a long ways off, but when they get close to the trade deadline and they have got some cap space to work on and they think about what they need to add to this team to upgrade, I think it's going to be that left wing spot, you know. Depending on what happens with Muzzin and Hall and the defense and how they play the next couple months. But that's the real need, is that they need another forward that can play in the top 6. And, you know, I think when Ilya Mikheyev gets back, they're probably going to give him an addition in the top 6. Probably not a fit with Matthews and Marner. But, you know, to play devil's advocate, though, I mean, if you got Matthews making almost $12 million a year and Marner's making almost $11 million, those two guys should be able to play with almost anyone and elevate them, even if it's a Michael Bunting that's making $950K. So, you know, I think what we're seeing with Austin Matthews more than who his line mate is that having that off-season surgery and missing training camp, and it set him back more than I think anyone expected, including himself. You know, he hasn't really looked 100% like himself. He hasn't handled the puck. He hasn't shot the puck the way that we saw last year when he was just dominating. And, you know, we've seen flashes of it lately, but I think it's just going to take him a little bit here to get back to the kind of player that we know that he could be.
James, really appreciate you joining us, and enjoy the sun out in California. Enjoy the road trip, pal.
Okay, thank you.
All right, there he goes. I know you hate it every time I say that, so now I purposely say it.
But it's almost like he's riding his pony down the beach since he's in California.
Exactly, the Segway down in Malibu. Malibu Beach is a little riding a Segway through the sand. But yeah, James Myrtle of The Athletic, thank you so much for joining us. We're giving you another chance to win Leafs tickets. Follow at TSN 1050 on Instagram. Find our latest giveaway post and tag who'd you bring to see the Leafs versus the Blackhawks, plus a $100 vanilla Visa prepaid card from Petro Canada. A winner will be announced this Friday right here on Leafs Lunch. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on TSN1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DeCepto for Juliet Tashiri. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch. We'll catch you back here at noon. Gameplay with Mark Rowe and Nicky Ray next.